Yudinir, Virya, of valor or prowess. Panam, the prize. Vaidarbhim, daughter of Vidarbha. Malayadvajaha, Malayadvaja. Duty in the fight. Nirjitya, after conquering. Rajanyan, other princes. Pandyaha, best of the learned. Or born in the country. Known as Pandu. Para, transcendental. Puram, city. Jayaha, conqueror. Translation, it was fixed that Vaidarbhi, daughter of King Vidarbha, was to be married to a very powerful man, Malayadvaja, an inhabitant of the Pandu country. After conquering other princes, he married the daughter of Vidarbha. So you can repeat, it was fixed that Vaidarbhi, daughter of King Vidarbha, was to be married to a very powerful man. Malayadvaja, an inhabitant of the Pandu country. After conquering other princes, he married the daughter of King Vidarbha. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki, jai. It is customary among Kshatriyas for a princess to be offered under certain conditions. For instance, Draupadi was offered in marriage to one who could pierce a fish with an arrow simply by seeing the reflection of that fish. Krishna married one of his queens after conquering 7 strong bulls. The Vedic system is for a daughter of a king to be offered under certain conditions. Vaidarbhi, the daughter of Vidarbha, was offered to a great devotee and powerful king. Since King Malayadvaja was both a powerful king and a great devotee, he fulfilled all the requirements. The name Malayadvaja signifies a great devotee who stands as firm as Malaya Hill, and through his propaganda makes other devotees similarly as firm. Such a Mahabhagavata can prevail over the opinions of all others. A strong devotee makes propaganda against all other spiritual conceptions, namely jnana, karma, and yoga. With his devotional flag unfurled, he always stands fast to conquer other conceptions of transcendental realization. Whenever there is an argument between a devotee and a non-devotee, the pure, strong devotee comes out victorious. The word pandya comes from the word panda, meaning knowledge. Unless one is highly learned, he cannot conquer non-devotional conceptions. The word para means transcendental, and pura means city. The para pura is Vaikuntha, the kingdom of God, and the word jaya refers to one who can conquer. This means that a pure devotee who is strong in devotional service and who has conquered all the non-devotional conceptions can also conquer the kingdom of God. In other words, one can conquer the kingdom of God, Vaikuntha, only by rendering devotional service. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is called Ajita, meaning that no one can conquer him. But a devotee, by strong devotional service and sincere attachment to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, can easily conquer him. Lord Krishna is fear personified for everyone, but he voluntarily agreed to fear the stick of Mother Yashoda. Krishna, God, cannot be conquered by anyone but his devotee. Such a devotee kindly married the daughter of King Vidarbha. So, Upayame Viryapanam Vaidarbhim Malayadvajaha Yuri Nirjit Rajanyan panja parapuranjayaha. So Om Gana Timpananda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So it's interesting, the metaphorical understanding that Srila Prabhupada has given here, following the footsteps of the Acharyas, because Srila Prabhupada's purports are always following the footsteps of the Acharyas. If you were to read the Acharyas' commentaries like Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami, etc., you'll see how Prabhupada is really amalgamating and distilling the essence of the Acharyas' commentaries. It's not that he's coming up with some invention of the mind. It's actually, this is directly parampara. So, in this metaphorical conception that's here, we find that Vaidarabhi, or who was previously Paranjana, has now actually taken shelter at the lotus feet of a pure devotee of Mahabhagavat. And the reason I say that is that we understand the distinctions between the different levels or the different Bhagavats or the different levels of devotional service. Of course, we understand there's the Kanishtha Adhikari, there's Majjhima Adhikari, and there's the Uttama Adhikari. The Kanishtha Adhikari is defined as someone whose faith is very, very weak. That is, you know, they have challenges of faith, you know, problems, you know, is Krishna God? Or Prabhupada actually said that about many of us. He said, not many of you believe that Krishna is God, you know, as much as we're chanting Hare Krishna. Because actually, we believe that Krishna is God, and we believe that God was in everyone's heart. If we believe that Krishna was our well-wisher, we'd act quite differently than we're acting now. Or God is watching us at every moment. Or you have your monkey pet. I guess you want to go to Vrindavan. So we have the faith in these things. Because faith, firm faith, necessitates acting in a certain way. You know, tolerating certain things, going on, serving Krishna in spite of, you know, whatever occurs in this material world, happiness, distress, sitoshna, sukha, dukkha, da. So that's actually the external proof of faith. You know, one actually has that faith. Anyway, so the Kanishtha Adhikari has very weak faith, and it's quite dangerous because someone can argue him out of Krishna consciousness. Not only argue him out, some attractive feature, like a lady, can come and say, "Hi, devotee, you're so handsome," or something like that. Or to a devotee lady, "Hi, your eyes are like stars," or something like that. And they'll drop their Krishna consciousness. You know, you see that happen all the time. So that's really an indication of faith, whether one is steady or not. Because in this material world, there'll be so many disturbances. No matter who you are, there's disturbances. I mean, like Srila Prabhupada, before he came to the Western world, he was gored by a bull. He was mistreated by his godbrothers. I mean, so many things were there, isn't it? I mean, if you look, I mean, practically none of us would be able to tolerate what Srila Prabhupada tolerated, living very austerely in Vrindavan, having heart attacks on the way over. I mean, this, you know, it's not that everything was just like all the doors opened up immediately for Srila Prabhupada like that. But his determination was fixed. That's the point. He just kept going. Kept going regardless of what happens. What was there? You know, he had to live with a crazy person in New York, you know, who had cat food in the refrigerator. I mean, I had just given a class about that. That Prabhupada, you know, we think cat food in the refrigerator, it's all right, you know. I go visit my mother all the time, and she has cat food, dog food, she walks her dog, isn't it? You know, what's the big deal? But for someone like Srila Prabhupada coming from the spiritual world, it's like living in a cesspool. speaking of cesspool, I don't you know, you probably don't know what a cesspool is. I mean, a sewerage tank. I mean, it's just like, huh? Cat food? Yuck! I mean, for us, I mean, we just, like, take our cats and rub them and, like, you know, another person has a pet monkey there. You know, it's just like all these, even though monkeys are dirty. I mean, anyway. I know, I'm just teasing. So it's just like, you know, so we don't really have any conception of cleanliness like Srila Prabhupada had. I mean, we didn't wash our hands before eating, probably didn't wash them after eating, probably didn't wash them when we went to relieve ourselves. I mean, just all these things, so dirty, and all the hair we had. And, you know, the Vedic conception, everything, you know, very clean. So anyway, so you cannot imagine what Prabhupada had to put up with, I mean, with us. You know, really, you know, we are not, I mean, referring to myself, not to all of you, we are not the most, let us say, wonderful people to associate with. But Prabhupada put that up. Because how could he tolerate? Because of that determination, because of that faith. Yasya devi para bhakti yutate vititakuru. Because one has faith in the spiritual master, the words of the spiritual master and the words of Krishna in the Vedic literatures, then everything is revealed to one. I mean, that's really the test or the proof. So anyway, so Kanishtha Adhikari, his faith is very, very fragile. He can be deviated very, so you got to really protect the Kanishtha Adhikari. You know, don't look there, don't look there. You know, wake up now. You know, you got to, the temple commander has to wake him up early in the morning. Wake up, Mangalarti. So, because he doesn't have that faith. You know, it's just, he may participate in the activities of bhakti, but that's just because he's in the social situation or the social pressure is there so that he participates in it. But, you know, the proof of the faith is steadiness. Steadiness, determination, tolerance, all those things. Enthusiasm. There's all this stuff like utsahan, nisya, darya, tatat, karma, pravartanat, sangas, chagas, sato, vrite, sabir, bhakti, prasidyati. By Rupa Goswami, of course. Enthusiasm, determination, becoming fixed, darya, tatat, karma, following the rules and regulations, you know, rising early, like Prabhupada said. Prabhupada put so much stress on rising early in the morning. I mean, you don't see that so much amongst many devotees nowadays, that rising early is considered important. But this Brahma Muhurta, I mean, Prabhupada's stressing. You know, the first thing must rise before, the first notice you put in the temple must rise before 4 in the morning. You know, so, anyway, so these are Prabhupada's rules. So anyway, so tatat karma vartanat, and then sangos chagat, giving up the association non-devotees, sato vrite, following the footsteps of the great saints. And these are the things that one remains steady. And anyway, so that's the Kanishtha Adhikari. He doesn't have that steadiness, so you really have to baby him or her. Would rock a by Kanishtha Adhikari on the treetop. When the wind blows, your devotional service will rock. And they say, you understand? Rock a by Kanishtha Adhikari. So then after that, there's a Majjhima Adhikari. Majjhima means middle. And the Majjhima Adhikari has that firm faith. He's not deviated from Krishna consciousness. However, he's not so expert in what's being described here in this particular verse and purport, in argumentation. You know, he really is not so expert in defeating people. I mean, not physically, but verbally, defending the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, preaching. He preaches, yes, he does preach, but he's not that expert. You know, he doesn't know the philosophy that well. He can't quote so many verses. But he has the firm faith. He'll stick to Krishna's lotus feet. And Majjhima can be a pure devotee also. But what's being described here is, like Prabhupada said, unless one is highly learned, he cannot conquer non-devotional conceptions. So what's this highly learned thing means the Uttama Adhikari. Of course, there's many different definitions of these three different classes of devotees, too. It's not only the definition I'm giving now, but at one point Prabhupada says the Uttama Adhikari is one who is quite expert in the Shastras and can defeat any other conceptions and also has firm faith. And another definition probably gives the Uttama Adhikari is Uttama Adhikari doesn't preach because an Uttama Adhikari has just seen everybody is serving Krishna. So there's actually, it's quite interesting, according to the context, there's different definitions of Uttama Majjhima. Uttama and Majjhima Kinnish is usually the same. So here, Vaidar B is very fortunate to have the association of her husband, and the husband, later on we'll read, is taken figuratively or metaphorically as the spiritual master. Of course, whether it's a husband or a spiritual master, if one takes shelter of such a person who's an Uttama Adhikari, then one's devotional service is very much assured. I mean, one's going back to Godhead is very much assured. So, here, Vaidarbhi, or Paranjana in her previous life as a man, somehow or other got the great fortune to be able to associate with a pure devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And as we read here later on, that she'll take advantage of that association by service, submissive service, as we find in the Bhagavad Gita, Tadvini Paripatena Pariprashnena Sevaya. That it's described one should approach the spiritual personality or guru or advanced devotee and inquire from them submissively and render service to them, and then such a great soul can impart knowledge to you because they've seen the truth. I mean, everybody knows that verse in the Bhagavad Gita. So we should take advantage of that ourselves because we have also been given the association of a Mahabhagavat, Uttama Adhikari Srila Prabhupada, no matter who we're initiated by. And that's not to denigrate your guru, you know, or whatever. But no matter who, whatever it is, whoever we're initiated by, we actually have that association with the Mahabhagavat Srila Prabhupada if we take that association. Now, then we should be chaste to Srila Prabhupada and Srila Prabhupada's society and Srila Prabhupada's instructions, and regularly hear from Srila Prabhupada. In that way, the pure devotee's bhakti-shakti, bhakti, the energy of bhakti, will actually implant itself in our heart, as described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Brahmanna Brahmate Konna Bhagyuan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakta Lata Bhij, that even though we're wandering within this material universe in various species of life, when we come in contact with a pure devotee such as Srila Prabhupada, that bhakti becomes implanted in our hearts, and then we get the opportunity to become pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we are in a very similar, all of us members of the Krishna Conscious Movement, a very similar situation to Vaidar B. And somehow or other we find ourselves in this situation. So it just depends on how we choose to act, how we choose to think, how we choose to dedicate ourselves that determines our own level of spiritual advancement. We have the blessings. We have the opportunities. It's a question of taking those blessings and taking those opportunities, and then our life will be successful. So any questions or points, comments on this? Yeah. Time to another, yeah.
And of course, it shapes what our next birth will be. So, if one carries desires from one lifetime to another, and somehow or other, by the arrangements of providence, you're not able to fulfill those desires, even if those desires are still there, but they don't act on them, then will Krishna?
Well, first of all, if one is advanced, he's able to distinguish between the mind and the intelligence and the soul. So the desire is only your desire if you identify with it. Think about it for a second. Like my mind may be thinking, I mean, for example, my mind, I've given the example before that many times I've wanted to go hang gliding. You know, so that's a desire in the mind. But because I don't identify with it, I don't think it's my desire. It's not. It's just that because I'm identifying with my spiritual intention, my spiritual determination, my sankalpa, then not only do I not give into it, but I just don't identify with it. It's just described by Krishna in the Gita that even though a devotee is like the ocean, that so many rivers enter into the ocean, but the ocean always remains the same. So these things will come up to the surface. They'll bubble up to the surface. Like Prabhupada gave the example, when you're making ghee, these things bubble up to the surface. But you just scoop them up, and you just chuck them to the side, or put them into the garunga potatoes. That's how you make garunga potatoes. You put the impurities. You ever do that? You put the ghee impurities in the garungas. In the garunga potatoes. You never did that? Yeah. So, of course, we do not put our own impurities in the garunga potatoes, but at least the ghee impurities can be there. So these things that bubble up, you don't. As soon as you identify with them, then you're in trouble. Then they're your desires. If that's it, you know, things will pop up, but you just don't identify. That's not productive for Krishna consciousness. I don't accept it. I mean, just like some lady may come to you and say, you know, please marry me. Not up to you, of course. Maybe. But, you know, or to a man, or a man may, and you don't have to accept them. But sometimes we're so, like, guilt-ridden that we think we have to accept everything that comes to the surface. Or everybody who comes and tells us, you know, you have to do this for me. You have to, you know, be controlled by others. So we should not accept these desires. And then we don't. And then also, the statement is that devotional service dissolves the subtle body. So that's a statement by Lord Kapiladev, that particularly by the process of hearing and chanting, these desires become dissolved. And one day, you know, you just realize they're not so strong, and then they get weaker and weaker and weaker, and then it's not so important anymore. I mean, I've experienced that in Krishna consciousness. The more you hear and chant, the other things, it's not that they disappear all of a sudden like that. It's just that they're less important than they were before. So anyway, so you don't have to work out every desire. You just have to hear and chant. And also, we should be able to distinguish desires from needs. There are certain needs. I mean, for example, you know, we all have a need for friendship. That's all right. But a desire is a specific strategy for fulfilling that need. You know, let's say I have a need for friendship. We all have a need for friendship, all right. So, let's say to fulfill that need, I go to the pound. You know what a pound is, anyway. I go to the SPCA, you know, the Society for Prevention of Cruelty Animals. I said, I really have this need for love and friendship. And then as a strategy, I get a puppy. So see, there's a difference between, so there's other strategies you can employ. Like, you know, make some friends with some other devotees, you know, your god brothers and god sisters. It's a lot cleaner than a puppy. You know, but it's the same need. The need is fine, but your desires, there's some problem with it, some of the desires. So we all have basic needs. You know, you have a desire to eat, so eat prasadam. Don't go to Pizza Hut. There's no problem with your need to eat. There's a problem with your expression of that particular need. You follow what I'm saying? So we have to be able to distinguish. That helps us deal with desires also. We have to understand what need is behind the desire and see if the desire or the strategy is an appropriate Krishna conscious response to that need. And in some cases it is, in some cases it's not. And then we consult with other devotees to see if it's appropriate or not appropriate. Anyway, that's how we deal with desires. That's a very practical way to deal with desires that are popping up, you know, because there are millions of strategies to fulfill the desires, and many of them are Krishna conscious strategies. Yeah. You have a question.
On the other side of this, because by practice we can set aside all these desires and inspiration may be coming, and Krishna may want me to do something, but I find myself habituated to scrutinizing the desire into oblivion. Like, okay, well, it's coming, so, rhymes are coming, I'm analyzing. And it's not important, and I set it aside.
You can do that, that's fine.
Reading and chanting, but it comes again, and again, and again, and it might be, I don't know, it might be the Krishna saying, well, why don't you start something? You're so lazy, you know, why don't you do some business? Right? And I think, well, everyone I've ever seen in this business just got themselves into trouble and lost money and all that stuff. But then there's still facility, there's facility. You know? And I'm wondering, well, Should it happen?
Then just do business with Krishna.
Yeah, do it for Krishna.
Well, not to necessarily do it for Krishna. It's not that you have to do business. You explain to Krishna that you have this desire, and then you go talk to the Vaishnavas, see if it's appropriate. I mean, advanced devotees, and see if it's appropriate. And then you make your own decision. It's not necessarily bad. I mean, to do business for Krishna, there's many devotees who do business.
As you said, this is a very interesting approach to that. I don't identify it as mine, but it's still like washing up on the shore.
Then just ignore it. You know, it's like so many rivers coming,
and
the ocean remains still. But the rivers will keep coming. The point is, because of our past conditioning, there's some habits there that keep popping up. But we just don't. We just see them as habits. We see them as different habits, and we try to. Anyway, we just ignore the habit, those habits that are not productive to Krishna consciousness. So yeah, the desire to do business. I mean, I come from a long line of businessmen too. That's my gotra. Nice Jewish gotra. But anyway, so. The desire is there too, but I understand it's not appropriate, and I just don't deal with it. And it doesn't bother me. It's not that something is haunting me all day long, maybe I should be investing in the stock market or opening up a business, you know, sannyasi DD clothes or something like that. But sometimes you see people get, what? Yeah. I mean, so we can advise, but we don't have to identify with those specific desires. We can choose whether or not to accept them as our own. Just like you don't have to accept every lady who approaches you as your wife. You can choose that. I mean, even though she may tell you she's going to die without you. There was this person anyway, the sage Vibhantika. Oh, very interesting. And he was the father of Rishi Mukh. This is a story from the Ramayana. And they sent this girl from the heavenly planets to dissuade him from his austerities. Her name was Harsha. That means like a nice, smiley girl. So she came, and she smiled at him, and he said, all right, what do you want? And she said, I want to have a kid by you, a relationship with you. And he said, no. And she said, I'm going to kill myself if you don't. So, you know, he was confronted with that. So he gave some genetic material. But she wasn't thinking like that. She was supposed to make him fall down. And then as a result, Rishi Sringa was born. She didn't really want the kid, so she gave the genetic material to a deer. And then there was a boy with horns born. That's Rishi Sringa. It's a famous story in the Ramayana. And this... Anyway, and he wouldn't let, because he had been so upset with her dealings, he wouldn't let his son, Vibhandaka, wouldn't let his son see any women for his whole life. And so, because he hadn't seen any women, didn't know what they were, one woman was able to lure him out of his hermitage later on. Anyway, that's a long story. So the point is, we don't have to accept every proposal that Maya puts in front of us. I mean, some of them, we can accept some proposals that are productive to Krishna consciousness. But not that everyone, no matter what Maya tells you, that your life is finished unless you fulfill this desire. You know, some woman may come up, like this Vibhandika, come up and say, the woman came, Harsha came up and said, I'm going to die unless you accept me. So Maya will say that, you know, not that she'll die. Maya will say that you have to do this. You'll die unless you fulfill your desires. Don't you understand? You cannot fight off these desires. Better fulfill them, then you'll become renounced later on in life. You know, there's so much preaching like that. Maya does to deviate us from the service of our spiritual master. Yeah.
Well, I assume we are on someone who has some windfall, and then they become very restless with something, and they buy a sports car, or they get remarried, or they move to another country.
Yeah, if they get a lot of money.
An island, you know, they've done all of it. And then I never hear of them again. And they're doing it with the best intention because Krishna laid this golden egg in their lap.
So
everyone has opportunity to, well, some fortune will come in the course of one's life. And how is it best utilized?
You utilize it with the association of devotees. One has to always, as soon as one starts to think independently of what's the best thing, then Prabhupada said it's like sticks, you know, it can be broken, an individual stick can be broken, you put the sticks together, they can't be broken. So that's why we have the association of devotees. I mean, if you're like someone like Prabhupada, you're associating with all the great acharyas, you know, all the time, associating with Krishna directly, but we're not in that situation, at least I'm not in that situation. And so we keep the association of Vaishnavas. It's important to have friendships among the Vaishnavas, and we consult with other Vaishnavas, and then we take it very seriously. Of course, when one, like the situation you mentioned, one gets a lot of money, one gets very proud too. Like Queen Kunti says, Janmai Shvarya Shvitasya Shibir Edamana Adapuman. Things make people proud, like a good birth. I mean, we had one lady here in the temple who came from a very so-called high-class family in some other country, and it was impossible to deal with her. Is there another question for you? She said, you know, I won't do menial service. I'm not that type of person. And so, you know, so there's so-called good birth. Remember that? Good birth, Janai, Aishwarya, wealth. It really just like you put money in someone's hand. Just like you see that, I don't want to give that example. I'll give an example. Just like in America that when there was oil discovered on some of the Indian reservations, there was a lot of money put in people's hands, and they used it, and they got drunk, and they misspent it, and everything like that. I mean, that's not a denigration of Indians. It's just a question that it happened. So it just bewilders. One becomes very proud. I gave the example when my father passed away. I was thinking I was going to get a lot of money, which I didn't get any of it. And so, you know, on the plane there, you know, shows my mentality. But on the plane going, I was thinking, now I'll have all this money, millions of dollars, and everyone will have to listen to me now. You know, I'll give it to Krishna. You know, I wasn't thinking I'd get a sports car. I used to have a sports car. It doesn't turn me on. So I was just thinking, you know, we'll help in Mayapur, and then people will respect me now. So, you know, there's a certain pride that started to rise in the mind. So fortunately, Krishna arranged, I didn't get a penny. So you understand? So if you get money, wealth, or if you're very attractive, you know, if someone's very beautiful or handsome, Queen Kunti says, Shri Deer, these are very bewildering factors. Or if one is overly intelligent, you know, high education or overly intelligent, you know, they can just twist everyone around their little fingers and they become proud. So this pride arises. This is Queen Kunti's analysis, actually. It's not my analysis. Famous verse. You can read Prabhupada's purport on it and everything like that. These are bewildering factors, so we have to be very, very careful of these things. Of course, Lord Chaitanya prays, what nadanam nadanam nasundarim kavitam vao jagadisha kamaye. I don't want wealth or followers or beautiful women. All I want is your causeless devotional service life after life. So he's also indicating that these things are deviations from devotional service. Of course, if Krishna does send anything, we use it in Krishna's service. But if we take possession of it or think that it's ours, that is the problem. You know, my wealth, my followers, you know, the guru may think these are my followers like that. It's not like that. You don't own anybody. You know, that's a great illusion many so-called gurus have, that they own their disciples. What an illusion. Krishna's put them in that situation, and if they think they own their disciples, in the next life, they'll have a guru who thinks he owns them. That's the problem.